possibility of a sprinkler or shower today, or high temperatures will range into the upper 40s to near 50. For tonight, mostly cloudy this evening, partly cloudy overnight in the mid-30s. Friday's weather's looking partly sunny. Could be an afternoon sprinkle or a shower. Temperatures daytime in the lower 50s. At night, mostly cloudy, then partly cloudy, back to the mid-30s. For the last couple of days, this month of March, Saturday, sunshine in the lower 50s. Sunday, Easter Sunday, partly sunny to start, then cloudy over, chance of rain showers. Afternoon and evening are highs in the lower 50s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for WVOX Worldwide, WVIP HD.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Andrea McCardle, Don McLean, Kathy Wilson Conroy, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours. Thank you for joining us on 1460 WVOX, America's great community radio station where many different voices are heard in the land. Opinions expressed on our community and open line programs are not necessarily those of the station, its management, or sponsors. As always, we're privileged to amplify the voice of the people here on Vox Populi 1460 and worldwide at WVOX.com for you and yours.
This is America's great community radio station.
Really seems to be in touch with the heartbeat of the city.
AM 1460 WVOX.
WVOX. Good morning and welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lovensoul, your host for the series on the natural world, education and culture, and chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, March 28th, 2013, the eighth day of spring. It was a fairly cold winter, but not too much snow. So on balance, for convenience sake, we did okay. We've gained 3 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 38 since last we met 2 weeks ago. That's the exact amount of time we gained in the previous 2 weeks, so we're on a steady keel right now. The sun rose at 6:45 this morning. It will set at 7:16 this evening. We will have 12 hours and 31 minutes of daylight today. The moon will rise at 9:05 this evening. It will set at 7:10 tomorrow morning. Yesterday was the full moon. Next full moon is April 25th. Now, a regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives at war. May they live on in all of our hearts. Sergeant Tristan M. Wade, age 23, of Indianapolis, Indiana. He was with the 36th Engineer Brigade, killed by a roadside bomb in Ghazni province on March 22nd. Sergeant James Floyd Grissom of Hayward, California. He was with the 1st Special Forces Group, wounded by small arms fire on March 18th in Paktika province, evacuated to Landstuhl Regional Medical Center in Germany, where he died on March 21st. That was 1 week ago today. And Chief Warrant Officer James E. Groves III from Kettering, Ohio. He was with the 3rd Infantry Division, killed when his helicopter crashed in Kandahar Province on March 16th. These three American servicemen were alive when last we met 2 weeks ago. Each death is a great loss to their families and to all Americans. I look forward to that day in the near future when this feature comes to an end, because there are no more deaths to report. Now time for the Culture Corner, my reviews of plays, movies, opera, ballet, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions and you have the right to disagree with them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Today you have the right to be wrong if you differ from Sandra Prosnitz, who joins us in the studio today. She is our dance reviewer. She saw a production of the Alvin Ailey 2 group a week ago Sunday. Sandy, you actually went to the Ailey 2, not the Ailey.
No, it's the Ailey 2, which is their student company.
So that's the difference. This is the student company. Okay, why don't you give your review?
Yeah, Ailey 2 is a small company. It's just 12 dancers. They are all students of the Ailey School. And the program Sunday afternoon consisted of new works by contemporary choreographers. The first piece was entirely too new for me. The lights went down and I heard a rumbling noise, which I thought was a subway train passing under the theater, but which turned out to be the accompaniment for the first piece, called One Forgotten Moment. I really can't call the collection of rumblings, screeches, and other noises music. And if they weren't music, then this piece wasn't a dance. After this dispiriting beginning, things improved rapidly. Tyler Brown did a wonderful solo, The Calling, to medieval choral music. Wearing a long white dress which formed a perfect circle around her, she twisted and turned, arching her back and flexing her arms to show her emotions. The dance, an excerpt from a longer ballet, was entirely too short. This was followed by Rusty. Young men working out at a gym showed off for the girls, sometimes impressing them and sometimes not. The piece was sexy and humorous. The star of the show was Virtues. This was a perfect piece to show off the talent of these young dancers. It sparkles with charm and energy. The music by Welsh composer Carl Jenkins contrasts lively choral music with lyrical orchestral interludes. The dancers smiled all the way through, and so did I.
That's very charming. Great. And I'm glad that you panned the first piece, as did Deborah, who accompanied you. But yet it was a positive review. So Ailey 2, on balance, you would say, is worth going to see.
Oh, absolutely. I would go and see them again.
Okay, but not perfect.
Not perfect.
Definitely not perfect. Okay, Debbie, my guest today is David Toomey, professor of English at University of Massachusetts Amherst and a science writer. David's current book is entitled Weird Life, The Search for Life That Is Very, Very Different from Our Own. In it, he discusses life as we know it and life as we can barely imagine it, but are assured that at least some theoretical biologists believe is possible. Joining us from Boston, welcome David Toomey.
Thank you, Bob.
Good morning. Now, you are in Boston. I got that right. Did I not?
That's right. Yep.
And what's the weather like up there?
The weather is cloudy and in the high 40s, I think.
Your estimate, is that good weather, bad weather, indifferent weather?
Say that again?
Just your own philosophical perspective. Is 40s and cloudy good weather, bad weather, or just... In nondescript.
My own philosophical perspective, it's nice weather for writing.
And you are a writer. Okay, let's get right into your book. Your book is entitled Weird Life, and the subtitle is The Search for Life That Is Very, Very Different from Our Own. Let's first just talk about life that we know before we get into life that we really don't know and may never know. And that's extremophiles. These are organisms, but legitimate organisms found here on Earth that we know and have documented and classified, which live in extremely extreme environments. Why don't you just give us a few words about extremophiles?
I think most people know or have seen pictures of some of the more extreme extremophiles. The most famous ones are those living around what are called the hydrothermal vent communities on the ocean floor. These are places where very, very hot water is issuing forth from cracks in the ocean floor, and providing, as it happens, relatively congenial environments. At least they're congenial for these organisms. And I'm speaking here of the tube worms. You can see pictures of in many places.
And you have a picture right in your book also, the rifted tube worms in the hydrothermal vent habitats between broken pieces of lava.
Right.
Right, okay. And what else? I mean, I've also heard about microbes that live in very cold places and toxic places. What about them?
There are organisms living in Antarctic sea ice that no one expected to find. Microbiologists have found microbes living in the wastewater tanks from Chernobyl, feeding off, as it happens, radioactivity. If you look broadly at all these organisms, it almost seems to be no limit to where things can live in terms of temperature. I mean, very hot places, very cold places. In terms of pressure, the ocean floor, where pressure is 90 times or nearly 90 times what it what it is for you and me on the Earth's surface, in terms of radiation, in terms of even absence of pressure, because spores, which are the dormant stages of many organisms, can live in outer space.
Really?
And seem able to do so, yes.
Are they found in outer space, or they just we have brought them out there and discovered that they can live by our own experimentation?
The latter. There have been a number of experiments putting spores and other organisms into space for periods of years. I think the longest experiment of this sort lasted 6 years.
And they live, and they thrive out there.
They're fine. Well, a spore. It may not be accurate to say a spore lives.
Right. Right.
But
it's a seed.
But it endures. It survives. But spores, in some ways, to someone studying spores, this isn't surprising because spores on Earth have been found that were millions of years old. I don't know exactly what the record is. I'm not sure anyone knows for sure. But certainly many tens of millions of years old, and pour a little water on them, and they're fine. We used to be able to, when I was a kid, you used to be able to order brine shrimp in
right.
a package.
Right, and they're dried.
Yeah.
Sea monkeys, right?
Say again?
They called them sea monkeys, didn't they?
They called them sea monkeys, yeah. I had some.
And they survived desiccation, right?
They sure do. Yeah, you just tear open the foil package and pour them in some warm salt water.
That's amazing.
And there you go.
So they're dried out, completely dormant, and they revive. Okay, fascinating stuff. We'll be right back with you, David. We have to take a little break. You're listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Two Egg, Florida, Bat Cave, North Carolina, Cut and Shoot, Texas, Hot Coffee, Mississippi, Monkey's Eyebrow, Kentucky, Hell, Minnesota, or Bayonne, New Jersey. You have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. This program is Environmentally Sound. In the studio with me is Sandra Prosnitz. I am Bob Levinsohn. My guest is David Toomey, and we will be right back.
And national news three times an hour. Here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio, I'm Lillian Wu. What investigators found at the home of Frank Lanza, the shooter in the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre, has now been revealed. Search warrants released showing
there were over 150 spent rounds inside the school. Lanza had a gun safe in his bedroom. And a witness told the FBI Lanza attended Sandy Hook Elementary as a kid and that the school was Adam's life.
Fox's Rick Leventhal, the arsenal of weapons found in Lanza's home include guns, shells, a bayonet, and several swords. Texting and driving, illegal in most states, but that's apparently not putting the brakes on it.
That driver in the car next to you is probably doing it.
Texting while you're driving?
Are you insane?
Now that PSA is geared toward teens, but an AT&T survey finds that adults are the biggest offenders, with almost half of the adults surveyed admitting to texting while driving, compared with 43% of teenagers.
Fox Radio's Jennifer Kuiper, Fox News. We report, you decide.
Habitat for Humanity of Westchester wishes you a great Passover and Easter season. During this time, please remember that thousands of people in the New York area are without a home. We take it for granted. The electricity is on, a roof over our head, the heat and the TV. We change 250 channels. But tonight, thousands still in the Rockaways and Staten Island in New Jersey are without a home. Please say a prayer and join us in this vital mission. Hit Habitat for Humanity of Westchester Facebook and make a donation online, habitatwc.org. We wish you the blessings of this holy season, and please join us in great mitzvah and Christian charity as we try to get people back in their homes. God bless you.
This is the authentic voice of the people.
It's a community station.
AM 1460, WVOX.
WVOX.
Oh, Okay, we are back. We're speaking with David Toomey, author of Weird Life. David, you did say that we have found life in almost every environment on Earth. Is there any environment that even extremophiles do not live in?
Yeah, well, there seems to be some. There are places on Earth that seem to have no water, like Chile's Atacama Desert, and there are places there that do seem to be barren, and there are parts of glaciers, parts of glaciers in places like, for instance, Greenland, that likewise seem to be barren of life. Also, it's possible to find places near the ocean floor where temperatures are high enough and pressure is great enough that doesn't seem to be pressure, but does seem to be temperature. So you get up above 400 degrees Celsius, and life seems, well, life as we know it anyway, would seem to be impossible.
Okay, now that's a perfect segue. You say life as we know it, and actually your book is largely speculative about life that we don't know and that certain scientists speculate that it could exist. For instance, there are some speculations of life that lives as silicone rather than as carbon. And yet in your book, you list three or five, I forget what, really killers of that theory, which say, well, you know what, carbon is very supportive of life, and silicone, while theoretically possible, there are some very good reasons why it would not support life. You want to discuss that a little bit?
Yeah, a lot of the reason silicone has been thought to be something like carbon has to do with its basic chemistry. It can form long molecular chains, just like carbon, and it does seem to be, if you want a living organism or you want biochemistry, you need long molecular chains. So that's good if you're looking for that sort of life. What's a disadvantage of silicon in this realm is that it seems not to be as amenable, as agreeable chemical partner as carbon is. It doesn't bond with nearly as many chemicals.
It's unable to form double and triple bonds, according to your book.
Yeah, yeah.
So it cannot capture and channel electrical energy. That's a very interesting combination there.
Right, right. And you're going to, and that's something life as we know it does.
Right.
Another disadvantage of silicon around here is that, around here I mean on Earth, is that it bonds very readily with oxygen. And although there is a lot of silicon on our planet, most of it is locked into rocks.
Isn't it the most common element on Earth?
I forgot, I have to go check, but it's either silicon or oxygen, I think.
Okay. Let me just apologize to the audience. We were unable to reach David on his landline, so we have him on a cell phone. So if the reception is a little bit hard to listen to, my apologies. Please try, though. Okay. So now I lost my train of thought. Okay, yeah, the thing was, is silicon the most common element on Earth? David, do we have it? Yeah.
I've got to check.
Okay, no, it's okay.
It's one of the two most, but I don't remember.
We're not going to hold you to such things. What about ammonia and methane? I think you have a picture in here also of an organism that lives in methane, some kind of ugly-looking worm. Oh, there I go, being anthropomorphic. A beautiful worm by nature standards. There it is. A methane ice worm. Discovered by NOAA in 1997, or at least the photograph is NOAA, living on and within mounds of methane ice on the floor of the Gulf of Mexico. So does it use the methane? Does it also use oxygen? Is it methane-based in its life?
It uses the methane, whether we wanted to say it's methane-based. That's arguable, I think. There are methanogenic organisms. This is one that use methane where other organisms would use oxygen. So that is a pretty strange organism. It is not what we're really talking about when we talk about weird life. The weird stuff is far weirder.
Okay, now, before I let you get into your pet weird thing in the last minutes of the show, I just want a word about viruses. The common conception is that viruses are living organisms, and we disagree. Do we not, David?
Do we disagree?
Yeah, I mean, you and I agree, but we disagree with those who think viruses are living organisms.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Okay, so the question is,
I think we disagree, yes.
The question is, are viruses alive? And if not, why not?
Well, I think most biologists, microbiologists would say they are not alive. They don't meet the standards for life because although they do reproduce, they need to do that reproducing within a host organism.
And they don't carry on any of the other life processes other than reproduction, which is the single life process that no organism needs to survive, just the species needs it.
Right, right. Well, one might say they do evolve, but evolution might seem to be part and parcel with reproduction and vice versa.
Yeah,
but even that isn't... I think most microbiologists would say no, even that doesn't qualify them as life.
Okay, now I have lots of questions that we don't have time for about some philosophical, some about humans' place in the biosphere, and are we really the most intelligent, and would the most intelligent animal be foul its environment and kill, could commit homicides and things. But the book is Weird Life. It's David Toomey, Weird Life, and it's published by Norton. David is, as we said, a professor of English at University of Massachusetts at Amherst. But Weird Life, when we talk about Weird Life, we talk about possible combinations of things that we would acknowledge are living elsewhere in the universe, not just on Earth, possibly on Earth. None have been discovered, but just what do we mean by weird life in that context?
Well, to answer that, we need to remember, or we need to define what we mean by familiar life. And I think many people may not realize this, but all life that scientists know of, that is you and me and oak trees and giant squids and turnips, we all share common features. We have the same lipids in our cell walls. Inside those cells, we have the same amino acids and proteins doing exactly the same things in the same ways. And all life we know shares these very particular features. And this fact, these shared features, lead biologists to think that all life descends from a common ancestor, a last universal common ancestor, a microbe that pulsed into being some 3.5 billion years ago. So all life we know could be represented on a single phylogenetic tree. That's the tree diagram you see in biology textbooks all the time. What we mean by weird life would be life on another phylogenetic tree entirely, or life that descended from another last universal common ancestor entirely. It would be utterly different.
And as you say, there we have never discovered this, and we have not. There's not even any program in place to do so. We're not actually looking for this.
No way. Well, a few people may be. A few people associated, for instance, with Paul Davies at the University of Arizona, have undertaken studies looking for it. But the, but there's no real seriously sponsored program for this. Whether, for that reason, it might be unlikely to be discovered anytime soon. And yes, it's at this point, weird life is entirely theoretical.
Okay, so we don't really know what form it is. We're just taking what we do know, that silicone does have a theoretical possibility of supporting life, and ammonia, and there, and based on that, and based on things that we find through our space exploration, we say that it's possible that there are conditions that would support life that we would consider what you say weird.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, so. and some of the problem here is, what do we mean by weird? Once we sort of step off the pier, it could we could go anywhere.
Right. Okay, David, I'm afraid we've run out of time. It's a fascinating subject, and it's quite an interesting book if anybody's interested in it. Weird Life, The Search for Life That Is Very, Very Different from Our Own, by David Toomey. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, I would like to thank David Toomey for joining us on Environmentally Sound today, and Sandra Prosnitz for coming to the studio to review our ALEE program. She will do that when we have Dance Generally. Life, it seems to me, is miraculous in a secular way, and amazing and impossible to understand. Many humans adhere to simplistic explanations, but basically there is no knowing what is out there or even where life came from. Did it originate here on Earth, or was it carried like so much intergalactic flotsam from a place far away? Was it brought here by the currents of space or the winds of time or both? Our thought for the week: any man who can drive safely while kissing a pretty girl is simply not giving the kiss the attention it deserves. Guess who said that? Albert Einstein. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station, the flagship of Whitney Radio. Next up, Howard Stern and The Reason I Get Up in the Morning. Thanks to Bill O'Shaughnessy, Don Stevens, and Debbie Schechter. I am Bob Leventhal, chronicler of the demise of Homo sapiens. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. See you in 2 weeks. You are here. It is now. Health and happiness to you all.